Chapter 1. The Aristocracy of Capital. Alexander Hamilton had been impatient his whole life. As a boy on the Caribbean island of Nevis, he ached to escape the stigma of his illegitimate birth. As a 13-year-old clerk in St. Croix, he couldn't wait to find something better. I contemn the groveling and condition of a clerk or the like, to which my fortune, etc., condemns me, he wrote a friend. I wish there was a war. St. Croix taught Hamilton about money and trade. At the crossroads of three empires, the British, French, and Spanish, he dealt in rum and cod and bread and mules, denominated in pounds and livres and dollars, backed by gold and silver and land and promises. But there was rarely enough of any currency so far from the imperial metropoles. I am a good deal puzzled to fulfill your engagements, he wrote his employer when the latter was away. Cash is scarce. It remained scarce after Hamilton escaped the West Indies for New York. His break followed a 1772 hurricane that ravaged St. Croix, but allowed the clever young man to gain the ear of the world by penning a graphic account of the storm that was printed in several papers. Good God, what horror and destruction! It seemed as if a total dissolution of nature was taking place. The roaring of the sea and wind, fiery meteors flying about in the air, the prodigious glare of almost perpetual lightning, the crash of falling houses, and ear-piercing shrieks of the distressed were sufficient to strike astonishment into the angels. Perhaps it was the vividness of his portrayal that arrested readers' attention, perhaps the devotional gloss he appended. Where now, O vile worm, is all thy boasted fortitude and resolution? He asked of humanity. See thy wretched, helpless state. Despise thyself and adore thy God. Or perhaps it was his capacity for flattering those in power. Our general has issued several very salutary and humane regulations, and both in his public and private measures has shown himself the man. Whatever the cause, a group of benefactors decided the boy was meant for better things, and sent him to New York for an education. Hamilton hurried through King's College, soon rechristened Columbia on account of the troubles that developed between King George and his American subjects. Hamilton embraced the troublemakers. That Americans are entitled to freedom is incontestable upon every rational principle, he declared. He enthusiastically endorsed attempts to hit the British where it hurt the most, in the commerce that connected the American colonies to the motherland. This commerce Great Britain has hitherto regulated to her own advantage. Can we think the annihilation of so exuberant a source of wealth a matter of trifling import? On the contrary, must it not be productive of the most disastrous effects? As he would the rest of his life, Hamilton contended that economics ruled the world, eventually, if not at once. The American colonies had been planted as a commercial venture. If the venture proved unprofitable, as a boycott of British commerce would render it, then the colonies' British sponsors would feel the pain. A boycott would bring Britain's commercial classes to their knees, and consequently, Britain's government to its senses. But economics acted too slowly for some of the colonists. The boycott acquired martial assistance when fighting broke out in April 1775 at Lexington and Concord between American militia and British regulars. The Continental Congress appointed George Washington, America's most experienced officer, to head up the Continental Army and oppose the British outside Boston. Hamilton contributed from the distance of Manhattan. He harangued his classmates in favor of the rebel cause, aided in the rescue of cannons at the Battery from capture by the British, and organized an artillery company of volunteers, with himself as captain. He fought in the unsuccessful defense of New York, made more difficult by the pro-British influence of the city's large number of loyalists, and in Washington's retreat across New Jersey. His valor and abilities won the esteem of his superiors, of whom two offered to make him aide-de-camp. He declined, claiming disdain for the personal dependence such a staff position entailed. In fact, he was holding out for better. And when Washington requested that Hamilton join his entourage, he accepted at once. The young man,